You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Frederica Foster. Frederica is in Seattle right now. Thanks so much for being with me.
Thank you so much for asking me. I'm absolutely delighted to be talking to you today.
Well, I am too, and I want to ask you about your work, but I know that Seattle is enduring, the effects of as you were saying off the record before we started talking, there's fires going on in the West that you're affected by?
Very much. In fact, the reason I'm so hoarse is I've been breathing smoke most of the summer, but today it's so bad. Normally I can see the mountains from my studio. I can't see them. There's terrible fires that are getting closer to us. They're in the mountains. They're in central Washington, Oregon, Montana, and British Columbia. It was so bad that I had to turn on the windshield wipers this morning to use my car because of the ash. So that's why I sound so hoarse.
Oh my God, but it's also quite toxic, really, I would think, because you're actually breathing in the ash, you're saying.
Yeah,
it's, I know. It's being
inhaled.
Can't
be good.
Huh. And Seattle, I want to talk about your work, but maybe we should also talk about the water, because I know that influences your work a lot. And did you grow up in Seattle? Is that where you're from?
I did. I was born and raised here, and I've spent my whole life living on or near water. So when I had started doing a series of symbols from different faiths, and as I worked on that series for several years, it turned out that every single religion, spiritual tradition, uses water as a metaphor, or it's some very important story to be told about the water. And as soon as I started painting water, I came back to my subject matter, because I came back to what I knew best, which was water. So since then, things really changed for me. You can imagine I didn't have the easiest time integrating myself into the New York art world with a series on symbols from different religions. But water was a different story altogether.
So let's talk about that first series of water paintings. When was that?
The first, I started doing water first in the 70s for a brief period of time. I lived right above the Duwamish River, and I was doing just the water, but I was using watercolors at that point. And then I went into more figurative work and stayed there for a number of years. And the show that I had before I moved to New York was a show about Eve leaving the Garden of Eden with her snakes, because she couldn't imagine why she should hang out there, since she was getting blamed for everything. So she decided to leave. And I brought that series with me to New York and just continued working on some of these ideas, and then eventually returned to doing the water again. So I got signed up with the Fishback Gallery and was getting ready for my sixth waterway show with Fishback when Larry DiCarlo had to close the New York Gallery, and then he moved to Miami Beach, and now he's online only, which isn't the best for me, because my work looks very realistic when you see it on a small picture, but then when you get closer to it, it's very abstract, because I use so many layers to make my work. So when that happened, I immediately went to a therapist. I was so upset, because I can't tell you how happy I was in that gallery. Larry was very supportive, very good at selling my work. So, and I loved being able to interact with all the people in the gallery. I really liked having that sense of community. But after a couple of sessions, I realized, oh my gosh, I have been working so hard for so many years. And in the middle of that series of shows, I also curated a major show at the Cathedral St. John the Divine in New York City on water, which took over the entire cathedral. And
yeah, maybe we should talk about that a little bit too, because that's such a special cathedral. It's such an extraordinary place for the arts, for just being there, for concerts, for everything. Why don't we talk a little bit about the, well, I mean, I don't want to interrupt your train of thinking, but maybe we should talk about how that show was put together, because that was in a way a great expression of your interest in water.
Well, that was pure luck, being in the right place at the right time. Lisa Schubert came to my waterway show at Fishback and said, "Oh my gosh, Federica, I want to do a show on water. You're perfect. So would you come and talk to me?" So I went, and when I started painting water, I started collecting images of everybody else who was working on water, because I felt the minute somebody else was doing what I was doing, then I would do something different. So I wanted to know what everybody else was doing on this subject. I showed up with my file of 40 artists, and I told her, you know, I don't have enough work for this cathedral. It's impossible. And I'm getting ready for another show, but, you know, I'm perfectly willing to talk with the curator and give them these names. Well, it turned out I ended up being asked if I would be the guest curator. And I went and talked to real curators who told me that my list of names was completely impossible. But it was the cathedral. It was water. And I had a very strong vision. And the first artist I approached was Kiki Smith. There was that wonderful Keith Haring altarpiece. And I had seen her beautiful dewdrops that were like tears, the glass ones. So I asked her, how would you feel about showing those dewdrops with Keith Haring's altarpiece? She loved it. Once she signed on, then Robert Longo came along with one of his wonderful big wave paintings. William Kentridge provided his tide table. I had so many fabulous artists. Pat Steer, 40
artists. And how did all those artists come to the project? You invited all of them. That was your list that you wanted to have?
Yes. And then there were a bunch of artists on my list who weren't very well known. So we ended up with about 40 artists showing 200 works, including two fabulous pieces of Bill Viola's that were put in the baptistry. It was really something. I would lean up against the cathedral and say, you know, against the walls and say, "What do you want?" I could just, that cathedral was so astonishing. And the reason those artists said yes is because it was the cathedral and it was water. Anyway, when you get some of these artists on board, then the money followed, and the cathedral did a fabulous job, Lisa Schubert, of raising money. And then we had all these programs that came along with it. And the question I had in my mind was, can you do a purely aesthetic exhibition and create change by making a sense of connection, the same kind of connection you get in a cathedral or sitting on a bank looking at water? I think those feelings are very similar, or being in a museum looking at great art. You get outside of your small self and you connect with something greater than we are. I wanted to explore that. And I don't know if that worked. I think many people certainly became aware of issues around water that they wouldn't have otherwise. But the night that Food and Water Watch did a program, about 2,000 people showed up. And I looked over my shoulder at one point, and there were 40 tables set up of anti-fracking and pro-clean water people, and they were all exchanging cards, and I started crying. The cathedral's willingness to be an umbrella organization for all those groups was one of the small steps in getting New York to turn down fracking, I think. So it was pretty spectacular, and then I realized at the very least, art can start the conversation. And I think it can do a lot more. I've had people tell me that after seeing my paintings and saying, oh, well, I don't know what she's seeing, that's absolutely crazy, then they would go and see it themselves and write me and say, gee, Frederica, you saw something that I thought didn't exist, and I see it too. And that just makes me feel really wonderful when it happens.
Yeah, that is wonderful. It's amazing. It's an amazing thing that came together. So after that show, and perhaps just to reflect again back on water, how did you feel about this? So that show is over. It was a success. It was really kind of, you know, huge in terms of the names of people who came there and the works that were there. After that, how did you feel about your relationship to the water then? Did it change? Did it seem like this larger force? Because we haven't even really talked about it from that angle.
Well, that show ended in 2012, and in 2013, I had a one-person waterway show scheduled. So I think it definitely affected me because it so much increased my self-confidence to do something like that it made me take more risks, paint larger, be freer in the way I thought about things. It did have a very positive impact on me to do that. But I was working so hard that, you know, I did the 2013 show. Then in 2014, I had a show through Beacon Institute of Rivers and Estuaries. Those people are doing wonderful things for water. They're associated with Clarkston University. So I did that exhibition. And then in May of 2015, when I was getting ready for the next exhibition, as I said, Larry moved. And I decided to take a sabbatical year. It was wonderful. Not a sabbatical from making art, but a sabbatical from getting ready for the next waterway show and from doing business, any business-related things in the art world. So I took a couple classes. I took a class at the National Academy, pardon me, the New York Academy, on Dutch art that a couple in Chicago did that was absolutely amazing, that taught me the techniques of these artists that I had always loved. And I adapted some of them, but, you know, I can't do that kind of very structured work. I mix and match. I take what I learn here and what I learned there, and I put them together. So I had a great year, and I was included in several group shows and was able to talk about art quite a lot, did a couple of panels, put on a couple of panels about water and art and advocacy. So, and then in April this year, I was invited to come and talk to 250 scientists by this organization, Sage BioNetworks, which is committed to open data. And all of these scientists are very avant-garde, very progressive. And they decided it would be nice to have some art represented. So two of us participated in this, Buster Simpson from Seattle and myself. And we both did activities with the scientists. I worked with another scientist on exploring catastrophe to water because the sewage plant in Seattle was overflowing due to a catastrophic meltdown in February. And we did a performance around that with lab coats and bottles that were looked very scientific with water in them, and scientists painted under the supervision of an artist here, Randy, and we did posters, which they thought they were using contaminated water. We did posters that were Randy Nichols, by the way, the artist. We did posters under the supervision of an artist named Randy Nichols in Seattle that we then used in the climate march, which all the scientists attended from this conference. So that was another opportunity also to present my work and talk about water.
Well, and it's turned into kind of, which is unusual for art, you know, an activist tool in a way in terms of even consciousness raising, but also in terms of actually making a difference, like you were talking about with fracking in New York as well.
You know, one can only hope. You know, you do this little bit that is right in front of you to do, and hope that with all the tiny little bits that we're doing, that something positive can happen. I really felt that I'd been fighting pipelines for years, and we were starting to win on that Keystone pipeline until President Trump completely is backtracking on all the progress that we made. But maybe that time that was bought will make a difference, because market forces, I think, are starting to really favor alternative energy at last. But, you know, things are such a mess now, aren't they? I mean, flood and fire. It feels almost apocalyptic.
Yes, it does. It certainly does. And since you have a mad, you know, king at the helm, and it all seems too appropriate, you know. Oh, yeah. My God.
I know. I know. What can we say? I mean, it's just unthinkable. And we've seen the unthinkable happen in our lifetime. So
right, we're beyond, you know, reason or anything. I mean, it's so strange that now, you know, Bush, even Reagan looks, you know, like,
I know, yeah.
Good compared to Trump. I mean, you wouldn't think that would ever be possible, and here he is.
I know. I'm laughing because otherwise I'd be weeping. But you're right. I mean, I thought that, well, okay. I know I'm singing to the choir here.
Yes, you are. So, and what are you working on at this very moment? I mean, there's so many the things that have happened. I'm glad we talked about the cathedral and some of what's happening. Are you working on a different series at the moment, or what's happening right now?
I am really so excited about this. So I spent two days ago, I was out in the water. I'm right on Elliott Bay here in Seattle. I was in the water putting clothing as the tide was coming in and photographing tide clothing washing up against water, rocks, stairs, because I've started a series using cloth and water and clothing and water. And this has a genesis years and years and years ago when I was a student and seen that fantastic Jericho painting, The Raft of the Medusa, you know, that absolutely huge painting with all of the survivors and cloth used as a shroud and clothing used as a flag.
So,
here on the beach in Seattle, I have actually found clothing that had that particular way of using thread that is traditional Japanese sewing that has washed up on the beach that I think must have come from the tsunami and had been picked up at some point by a ship that then, you know, it got dumped here in the Sound and ended up on the beach. Every time I see clothing lying where it doesn't belong, a story appears in my mind, but it's a story without words. It's like poetry. It's so evocative to me. So what I'm working on now, and the painting that I'm working on here in my studio, I went to the Venice Biennale, the first time I've ever gone. I absolutely adored it. And I took some photographs there of those steps, those beautiful steps that you see all over Venice growing out of the water. And I'm doing a painting now because there's so many people dying in the Mediterranean with migration, people seeking sanctuary who are dying. And not to mention just that, but then you have all the people that were lost in the tsunami, the floods that are happening right now in Bangladesh, Harvey, hurricane, I mean, you can just go on and on and on. The number of people dying in water right now, for an artist who works with water, cannot be ignored. And I don't want to be literal about it. So I don't want to go for the obvious. So instead I'm using clothing, which may be obvious, but it feels more poetic to me. And I love the way it looks, and it's fun to paint and also. So I'm a great believer that painting will not ever die, because people have been doing it since they were putting their handprint on caves. And it feels so extraordinary when painting is going well and it's involving your entire being, your brain, your body, your spirit, your emotions. It's almost sexual. And anything that feels that good, they're not going to be able to get rid of. And I think all the people who show up to look at painting shows, because you can see the hand of the artist, you can experience with your own body the kinetic parts of the painting. You can see the rhythms. And as long as those rhythms exist, we have a sense of visceral, embodied connection to paintings that we don't get with screen art.
Mm.
So it takes time to look at a painting. It's completely different. It's meditative, which I think is really different than the kind of embodied experience you have with virtual reality or gaming or exciting films. That's a different kind of embodied experience, which doesn't call on the part of us that builds resiliency. And painting does. I think art and looking at art is a way to gain resiliency in the face of trouble.
Is a way to gain, say that again, fluency?
Resilience.
Resiliency, right, resiliency.
Yes, resiliency.
I like that. That's an important word for times of crisis, too, in activism, right, is resiliency. Our spirit can't be broken. We have to somehow kind of be resilient. And you're saying, in a very beautiful way, you know, I like what you're saying about painting also, but that the painting itself can help us with the understanding of resilience to some degree. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely, because it creates a sense of connection. Right after September 11th, a friend of mine went to the Metropolitan Museum, that day, and the museum was open, and she went in there, and she ran into one of her closest friends. And that friend said to her, "I see we worship at the same church." And I think that that really is true. I think that art, because it connects us with each other outside of culture, outside of words, before words, we have images, right? And color. And that joins us together. I feel that art is the most hopeful thing we can do with our lives, frankly.
Enrica, I want to thank you so much for talking with me. I want to ask you the last question, which is, what is it that you're reading at the moment?
So right now I'm reading K.U. Cole's fantastic book, Blind Spot, which includes his fabulous photographs of his travels and his writing about it, and I'm enjoying it so much. I've started a similar project myself. Actually, I've been working on it for years, Grains of Sand, that's going to take the rest of my life to finish, I'm afraid. And then I'm also reading Tristan Gooley, How to Read Water, Marina Abramovich's Walk Through Walls, and my Buddhist teacher Gelug Rinpoche's book on meditation, because I'm facilitating a Tara meditation for Jewel Heart in New York this fall. So that's what I'm reading.
Frederica, thanks so much for talking with me today. It's really been a great pleasure.
Yeah, thank you. I can't tell you how much I appreciate it, Brainerd.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.